Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A main, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A main, no rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God, Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Solid, man. Spring break ends now. I got to go back to work like a normal person, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, it was good, though. I had a good weekend with the family. We went up to Milwaukee to watch the White Sox get skull-fucked by the Brewers. And Murakami's good. That was a good pickup. Yeah. I'm sure he'll be out of here soon. Then we saw Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark with the Madison Symphony Orchestra today. That's always fun.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I was watching Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull today on cable.
You know, I have to be honest, I have not watched that since 2006. How has it aged?
I didn't watch the whole thing. It was just kind of like on in the background. I remember in 2006, I didn't really care for it too much.
Yeah, I remember.
I don't know why. I'm a, like the original trilogy. I'm like,
oh yeah,
like
great.
Three of my favorite movies, right? Crystal Skull, didn't really care for. And then the latest one, for whatever reason, I might be the only guy on the planet Earth that enjoyed that movie. It has, I did. And I went and saw it in theater. Like it was like, it was a mandate to my wife. I was like, I have to go see this in theater. Like they're bringing it back. I haven't seen any Indiana Jones in, you know, whatever, almost 20 years. And I liked it. And then I go online and everybody hated it.
That's how I felt about The Running Man. I came out of The Running Man and I told you, I'm like, dude, this movie rules. I loved it. I thought it was great. I got online and everybody's like, what a piece of shit. I'm like, oh, it's just me.
Yeah.
I still like that movie. I did not like Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, for the record.
Yeah, no, and I understand why people didn't like it. Like the whole time travel stuff, it got a bit hokey, but
it did. But a lot of the Indiana Jones stuff gets hokey. I didn't like her. I thought she was annoying and not charismatic, and like I didn't find her to be very likable.
Yeah,
like she doesn't. They try to make her like a male likable scoundrel, and it doesn't work. She was just not likable. I didn't care for her at all.
Yeah, I think you know. Hollywood needs to find some new characters because they just keep going back to the well, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Like I thought Beverly Hills Cop 4 was, you know, almost as good as Beverly Hills Cop 2. I thought it was that good. It's a legitimately good movie, but those are few and far between where like they're revisiting these characters, you know, whatever, 20, 30 years after the fact.
I'm kind of over it. Although we did watch the Scrubs reboot over the weekend.
Dude.
Pretty fucking good. It's pretty good.
Hey, wife and I are into it, man. Yeah, that's
me too.
Hey, that's why I finished Sacrifice today. As I was trying to finish it last night, my wife's like, can we watch Scrubs instead? And I'm just like, you know, all right. I got outvoted. I didn't really have a say in the matter. So
see, we have families and wives, so like can't watch wrestling all the time, unlike some people.
Yeah. Like, There was a guy on Twitter. This is so funny. There's a guy on Twitter because, you know, Maple Leaf Pro has AEW has extended their partnership with Maple Leaf Pro. We're going to get into some of their news. But, you know, they're going to land on TSN this summer. And they're going to be airing on Tuesday nights. Yeah. And someone on Twitter said Tuesday MLP, Wednesday Dynamite, Thursday Ring of Honor, and then Saturday Collision. And BQ quote tweeted it, and he goes, "You must be really knocking him dead with the ladies, bud." Yeah. It's like, yeah, maybe try other stuff, you know, like do some other things.
I can't be Brian Alvarez and just watch wrestling. Like I just, like when I remember a couple weeks ago, Brian's like, who is this Jelly Roll guy? And Dave's like, he's really famous, actually.
He's like one of the most famous singers in America right now. You know, I'm sure he's international too, but like at least he's doing stadium tours in the States. Like he's huge.
Like I'm not a fan, but I know who he is. Like I couldn't imagine being that out of touch and I couldn't imagine only watching wrestling. Like, I would be miserable if that was the only thing I let myself watch on TV.
Yeah, same here. Like I'm a big sports fan and, you know, I love movies and I'm watching Dark Winds. I'm like catching up on season 4. So I should be caught up here pretty soon, but I'm a few weeks behind in that.
That's on the list. Dark Winds. We're catching up. We haven't caught up. We haven't watched since season 1, but now that you're watching, I feel like, and Michelle actually brought up in the car. She says, well, we got Netflix back because the boy got it for Stranger Things. And she's like, oh, we should watch that show with, the guy from Longmire is how she referred to it.
Yeah.
I guess Zan McClellan is who you're speaking of.
Yeah. I call him Lieutenant Leaphorn now. He's not Lieutenant, Sergeant Leaphorn, sorry. I like him. And there's a new movie on Netflix with Alan Ritchson, the guy from Jack Reacher. Just beat the shit out of his neighbor and caught the whole thing on camera.
Living the American dream.
Yeah. This guy rules so much. Honestly. Honestly, actually, I legitimately fuck him because I just saw a video of him trying out for American Idol like 20 years ago. It's like, hold on, this guy's like really tall, super handsome. He's jacked. He's a bit of a badass. Like he can beat people's asses. We just found out. He's legitimately funny, and now the motherfucker can sing. Like fuck him. Like go to hell, you piece of shit.
Complete pussy magnet. Like this man is literally my hero. He was Aquaman on Smallville back in the day.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
a fact that I know and nobody else does, but
well, like, I'm a big fan of Jack Reacher. And there was like this online thing about making him Batman. I'm like, yes, 100%. Like I want him to be like the jacked version of Batman for sure. So
I feel like if Bruce Wayne was 6'4", shredded to the gills and had that kind of face, I feel like Gotham would be like, oh, very clearly this is Batman.
Yeah.
Like I feel like
you need to disguise it. How many guys are there like that?
Right. I feel like you need to disguise it a little bit better. That's why I kind of like the idea of Michael Keaton as Batman, but I do want to see Alan Ritchson be a superhero of some sort before it's said and done. Because he's legitimately awesome. He has a pain in the ass neighbor who was a little bitch and he got his ass beat by him. I'm like, this man is my hero.
Yeah, but anyway, he's got a new movie out called War Machine on Netflix. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. My buddy, he used to be on The Observer. He's not on The Observer site anymore, but Josh Nason, like said, like, Mike, you got to check this out. So I'm definitely into it. It's on my list of things to watch. So lots of stuff going on in the world of pro wrestling, though. We should probably go ahead and get to the chat first. The chat's blowing up tonight, man. You guys are crazy. Thanks. Dude, look at all this. A lot of stuff going on in the chat. We're going to get to the chat first.
Catch up with us, to be honest with
you. Yeah, I am not. I'm going to get to a couple of questions, and then we got to get to the news. We're going to try to keep this at an hour tonight. JD has got the boy in the room with him, so he's got to bounce rather quickly so we can't go overtime.
It's a good thing I have headphones on and he has headphones on because Mike admitted he would fuck man. Like...
Oh gosh. All right. AWN, he goes, Mike, did you go to WrestleMania 31 at Santa Clara? I did. Actually, just popped up on my Facebook today. I was taking videos of it. So wish WWE came out to Levi's more before TKO took over. Went with my uncle, had a blast. Only mania was Sting, Taker, DX, NWO, Roxy. I loved that WrestleMania. I had a lot of fun. So, but I was in 2014, I was a huge WWE fan. Like that's like that's all I was really watching. I was not watching any TNA at the time. I had just started getting into New Japan, but it was really like I was strictly a WWE guy. And I go to that show, I went to that NXT in San Jose and I went and saw Jim Ross's one man show that weekend. That was the first time I ever did and the last time I ever did WrestleMania festivities. I did go to the WrestleMania that was in LA a few years ago with Cody and Roman Reigns, but I enjoyed myself, but it wasn't the same. I did not have as much fun because I'm just not, you know, embedded in the WWE lore anymore like I was back then. So
Connor's coming after. Connor's going to come after you for that.
Who, Connor?
Yeah, Connor, that 21-year-old is going to expose Dave.
I figured that guy out. You know that's the pizza fucker, right?
I was literally going to ask you that. If this is the guy, like, when is this guy going to fuck pizza?
Like, I think it's the same guy. He just like has a whole different gimmick. He like switched up the gimmick. He laid low for a couple of years and now he's back, but under a pseudonym named Colin, I think.
Did he Colin, not Connor, excuse me. It shows you how important this guy is to me.
Yeah.
Did he switch up the gimmick? It's like he's
well,
just
it's the same British. Same gimmick. I think a different name and from a different country, but I think it's like the same dude doing the tweets.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, could just be a transplant. All right. AW, and I'm going to give you one more big dog, and then we got to get to the rest of them. Let's see. As we draw close to a year of the AAA buyout and the official declaration of the TNA partnership, what are your guys' thoughts on both after decades of WWE being isolationist, now playing with others? They're not really playing with AAA. They own it.
Yeah. that's like playing with your own toy. So it's like you went and bought a He-Man toy at the store and you're playing with it. It's not playing, let other kids play with the toys. It's doing what you want, but it has been successful. Like, I don't think that, I find it interesting that CMLL and AAA are truly their own things now. Like CMLL had their, like with WWE, with the shadow of WWE looming above them, CMLL had like their best year at the box office. You know, like 2025 was a massive year for them, and it's rolled into 2026. The TNA thing is interesting to me. They have been better with TNA. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like they're a cousin that they just kind of talk to sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably for the best.
Yeah, so I think the relationship has slowed down a little bit because I think it was too much. Like, TNA was all over NXT. NXT was all over TNA. And right now you only get Ariana Grace on TNA. And now, like this week, Mike Santana is going to be on NXT, but it had been a while. And I think that the partnership has benefited TNA like a lot. So like they're doing the best business they've ever done, you know, and they just got this TV deal. So I think it's been a good thing. You know, WWE does work with like, they sent some people to Marigold, I guess, like that Joshi. They've sent some people to Noah. Noah has sent people to NXT. So they're working with other folks, but I think that's a good thing. And I think that makes everybody better. As long as they don't get their hooks into these companies and fuck them over like they used to, I think that could be better. But you know, Tony's doing a similar thing where he's working with all these different companies. I think that's awesome. I think they should do that.
I'm something crazy. I actually think NXT, like, I don't watch NXT, haven't watched it in years. The NXT fan base seems much more unhappy with the product than they did a year ago. So I actually think, something I didn't expect to say a year ago, I think TNA got far more out of that partnership than WWE ever got. Like, WWE just wanted to hinder Tony, and that wound up not working either because AEW is doing some of the best things they've done in 2 years now. Yeah. So, I mean, like, It is funny that when WWE starts losing interest again, that like the other companies start to pick up, which is what we've seen. Like TNA is doing its best business ever. AEW's business is growing again. Maple Leaf Pro is starting to grow. A rising tide does not lift all ships when it comes to pro wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. TNA benefited the most out of like everybody in that relationship. You know, everybody thought WWE was going to come in and be predators. I think for good reason people thought that because that's the history, but it just hasn't happened with TNA. They've signed two of the wrestlers, you know, and they've been very giving with TNA.
They have been, surprisingly.
Yeah.
I don't think TKO cares as much as Vince did.
No.
This is why I'm going to maintain this. I don't think this TKO thing is long for this world. Like, I'm not saying it's going to go out it's going to go out tomorrow, but I truly think in the next 5 to 10 years, maybe I think closer to 5, I think you will see UFC and WWE be sold off.
Yeah.
Because there is going to be more value. Like, these big conglomerations, like, they stay together. I say this every week. They stay together for a little while, and then you can make money if you sell off the chunks.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that eventually someone's going to come along and buy WWE, or they're going to spin them out. Or something, because it just doesn't seem. It seems like TNA or excuse me, TKO is operating like they're going to make as much money as they can now, because they're not truly. It doesn't seem like they're interested in building, right? Anything that's about really building the company, they kind of lose focus with, like the ID deal. And like, you know, they're kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, remember when they were signing people to these like NIL deals and that was a big thing? And they don't really, they might still be doing that, but they're not making a big deal about it anymore.
Yeah. You don't really hear about the NIL stuff anymore. WWE ID is still a thing. I think they just signed up Starboy Charlie and Nikki Blackheart and a couple of other independent talents. But they're not really strict with them. Like, you know, they had Zeta Steele there. And she willingly left, like got out of her contract and signed with AEW, which is part of the WWE ID deal. Like if you can get a contract from somebody else, we have the right to match. And if we decide not to, you get to just go. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So
it's cool for Zeta, the
yeah, it's cool for the wrestler. Right. So that I think that's a good thing. So they get people on, you know, the radar of everybody and like they can start, you know, selling off their services. So that's cool. All right. Let's get to some more chat. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I want to come. Let's put a pin in this. I kind of want to come back to the talk of where wrestling is. I know there's a couple tweets from MJF and Tyson, TJ Wilson.
Yeah,
I forgot what his WWE name was.
Tyson Kidd.
Thank you.
Yeah.
TJ Wilson. We're texting about the state of the Indies right now. I kind of want to come back to that at some point. Let's get to the chat first, and then
let's get to the chat, and then we got some news to get into, and then we'll get to Tyson Kidd and MJF. See, bang bang Sosa for sure. Glad TNA signed Sosa. Yep.
Kidd's got money written all over him, man. Jesus. Yeah.
Good evening from Nebraska. What's up, my friend? Omaha Stiley over there with Chad Schultz. Let's see. Dude, I don't know if you saw, but in March Madness, Nebraska, they got eliminated from the tournament because they decided to go ahead and only have fucking four players on the court during like a pivotal point in the game. Yeah, it's crazy.
Seems like a problem in basketball.
Yeah. XWF Sosa has a bright future, but needs to work on his mic skills. He's 21. I think he'll probably get there, guys.
People used to say Will Ospreay was a terrible promo. Do you remember those days when they used to tell you Will Ospreay had no charisma?
Yeah, and he you can develop charisma over time. Like that's something.
Shawn Michaels used to be terrible with charisma. Yeah. Look at early rocker stuff.
Not everybody is a natural when it comes to public speaking. It just takes practice, right? Mm-hmm. And then eventually, sometimes it takes getting lost into a character, and then like you're just more comfortable for sure. Chad Schultz, have you seen the Twitter feed between Sean Rossap and JD from New York? I actually said that to JD. And, yes, I cannot tell you what else I sent him because we'll get in trouble. But.
Yes, we will.
I hate
sharing a name with this fucking guy. I say it every time his name comes up. Like, it's not even his name. It's actually my freaking name.
Yeah. Like his name's Jerry, apparently.
Whatever. Like. Yeah. I saw that and I'm like, these guys are gonna fight. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I should call Izzy and try to get him on the next RAF show.
That'd be fun. I think Sap did do some MMA training for a little while.
He did.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's greater than that, but I'm sure he would love to beat JD from New York's ass. And I'm sure my friend Izzy would love to make money off it. So
I would love to watch it, and I would drive across the border to North Carolina to be able to bet on that. I'm in a red state, so they don't let us do that. So I have to drive across the border to get that done. So, all right. EPW says, what's up, everyone? Hit the like button. Thank you, sir. Yes, everybody, like, comment, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. All right, couple more, and then we're going to get to – okay, you guys are – there's just too many. I can't get to them. I love you guys. If you want to stop me dead in my tracks, throw down a super chat. That's it, but there's a lot going on. I cannot get to all the chats. All right, JD, let's get to our top story.
Let's do it.
So main event of TNA Sacrifice was Steve Macklin versus Mike Santana. And to tell you how much I was so looking forward to this match. As you know, like I'm a big admirer of both of those guys. I've interviewed Steve a couple of times. I share a lot in common with both of these guys, with Mike Santana and Steve Macklin, for very different reasons. And they're two of my favorite wrestlers. I'm a big supporter of theirs. And I was just super looking forward to it. I interviewed Steve on the lead up to Sacrifice, promoted that show. I even went out of my way to recommend to our audience that if you're going to like only watch one match, that would probably be the match from Sacrifice to watch. I'm recommending it to them. And they were doing pretty good for like 90 seconds. And they were knocking the shit out of each other legitimately in this match. And
well,
well, and then Santana hit Macklin with a super kick, and then Macklin's lights kind of went out immediately. And I got to give credit to Alice Lane, the referee. She noticed it immediately. She went and checked on Steve and took control of the situation, got Mike Santana backed off, called over the doctor. She did the whole X sign. The doctor came in and took a look at Steve, and Steve did not, it appeared to me that he did not want to leave the ring. And then Carlos Silva, and then eventually Ace Steel came out and they got him out of the ring. But looks like he's okay. I did reach out to him, and he got back to me the next day, and he told me that he was doing pretty good, and he's like good to go. TNA has reported that he is safe and he is good to go. And that he actually went to the, oh, come on, King, give me a break.
You weren't shilling it up.
Yeah, I was promoting a match for everybody that I think would be good. It wasn't very good because it got went to no contest within 90 seconds. It was fun up until that point, but he's good to go. He got to the hospital and he didn't end up getting diagnosed with a concussion, which concussions can be tricky. And as someone that worked at a trauma hospital, and I had to take Marines and soldiers and all kinds of people over to the TBI trailer so they can go get their TBI test done after blast injuries, you can fool those things pretty easily. And I've seen it in football too. So not to say that Macklin was fooling it, but if you answer the questions correctly, then you're cleared. Right. So, but I think he's going to be out a while. He ended up missing the Maple Leaf Pro Show over the weekend that he was promoted for. So I don't know when he's going to come back, but I hope he takes his time and just heals up properly.
Concussions are tricky. Having watched, yeah. I didn't watch the match, but I did see the clip online. He's concussed as shit. I don't care what anybody says. Diagnosing a concussion is tricky. And like, if you know how not to get diagnosed with a concussion, it's not hard to not get diagnosed with a concussion. You know, we see him, like I said, I'm a coach. I see it all the time. He was concussed. I will say this. For sure. I agree with you on the referee recognizing a problem. Just a couple weeks ago, we had that atrocity that happened down in OVW where the referee actually, you know, got concussed and was seizing in the middle of the ring, and the kids kept working. And I say kids because they're young. We have to do a better job of having wrestlers, you know, be able to do things on the fly a little bit and have to react when someone is very clearly not well. You know, you have to be cognizant of your surroundings. Like, again, it's a training school for the most part. OVW like to puff up their feathers when they had that show on Amazon Prime that people seem to have forgotten about. It's an indie. Al Snow, when he was doing his grift, things like someone's going to die in an AEW ring. And then one of his shows, you know, and then he just goes and covers his own ass about it because he's a grifter. Because look, kudos to TNA for that. What was the referee's name? I'm unfamiliar with that.
Alice Lane. She is a good ref, by the way. Like I watch her. Yeah, she's pretty good. I actually think she might be OVW trained, which is pretty funny. So
it is irony. she did a great job. Like, especially right now with where things are, I think she did an excellent job and feeling it out. And it sucks, but you know, Macklin's tough as shit. So as long as you just give him some time to recover, you got to be careful with the brain. You only get one of them.
Yeah,
and hope he's gonna be okay.
Yeah, I'm glad. Let me see. XWF said, still remember that super kick Goldberg did to Brett. I thought this was a pretty similar situation.
The difference is that
happened in 1999 and Brett kept going. No, it was 2000. Sorry. 2000 and Brett kept going. And then that killed his career forever. Like, he finished the match. And I think he actually wrestled a couple days later. And that was not good. So I think that, we're doing a really good job we're doing a better job with concussions these days in pro wrestling, you know, especially with all the issues that surround concussions. It's a very serious thing. And look, and everybody's getting on Carlos Silva for saying that the doctor said he didn't have a concussion. Carlos isn't saying that he wasn't concussed. Like, that's not what he's saying. He said he went to the doctor and they said he got cleared there, but he's good. That doesn't mean he's going to put him right back in the ring. His symptoms, right?
See, this is what, but that's all you step into what you said. The answer to the question is, well, the doctors are evaluating it.
Yeah.
We'll know more later. And you just That's all you have to say. Because if you say, well, the doctor said he had a concussion, and like he very clearly got knocked out.
Anytime you're not conscious,
it's concussed, right? That's just the rule of thumb. Like, as a wrestling coach now, if we are in the rules we've had the last 2 years, if the kid goes out, the man, the kid, if the trainers approach the kid and they say, "Are you okay? What happened?" And the kid says, "I blacked out," it's over. So man, the match, you know, that's why when you hear that as a coach, you're like, God damn it. Like, cause he's like, he said the magic word and there's nothing you can do about it. You know? Yeah. And I get, I get Brett. I get these guys. I'm still a competitor myself. I get in the moment. You're like, I'm fine. I can go. I just got my bell rung. Like, I understand that I am a meathead at heart, but I can sit here clear headed on a podcast and tell you that, you know, you need to pull back a little bit. And like we're so much better about concussion protocol. Cause like when we were kids growing up, you got a concussion. It was, dude, I know for a fact I played football with concussions.
Oh, for sure.
I know I did.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and we're in a much better place. But that's the thing, is you just got to take time. And as a leader, you don't comment on it. Someone goes, "Oh, I did so. How's so and so? Oh, you know, doctors taking a look at it. You know, day by day, we'll figure it out."
Yeah, I think he was just trying to give everybody a warm fuzzy, say that Steve's okay, and Steve is okay. That's the good thing.
But when you say he's okay, what does that mean? He very clearly is not okay. Like, and there's such a giant pendulum that swings when it comes to these things. That's why you have to go with the. I'm sorry to say this, but you got to go with the WWE non-committal stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you don't go with the warm and fuzzy. You go, "Hey, man, I'll be all right. You know, we're working on it day to day. Doc, we're working with the doctors." That's it. Yeah. That's all you got to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that what he said was a bad thing. There's no downside. No, if he puts him right back in the ring, okay, then we'll have a conversation. But that's not what's happening.
Here's what we have to remember, is Twitter isn't real. Like, anything that people say on Twitter and get worked up about, it never translates into real life stuff. It's just whatever your goons are on top of on Twitter, it's just not reality. So your best off Tony Khan.
Yeah. So yeah, he said it. There's no downside for what he said. And Steve's doing good. He told me himself he's doing good. He's told a lot of people and he came out and said it. I thought Mike Santana had a really, what do you think about this? Mike Santana commented on the situation this morning and him and Steve are mortal enemies on the TV show. But then and there he goes, "Look, freak accidents happen. It wasn't supposed to happen that way. Steve's one of my best friends." So I was like, you know, part of me like was like, you should have come on and say, part of me is like, Mike, maybe you should have said, you know, fuck him. I kicked his ass and knocked him out. I'm the champ, baby. But he's a baby face, so you can't do that.
you know who would have said that?
MJF.
MJF. did you see the Speedball tweet where Speedball, it was like Speedball's ringing one of my tweets from like 2 years ago. Like, there's people who don't like the way I wrestle, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I understand, I'm trying real hard. And it's like, I think you fucking suck.
MJF had another good one. He did. Cause they're doing an angle with Nemeth getting taken out backstage. Cause Nemeth wasn't at the TV tapings and he just commented on there. He goes, "LOL pussy." Cause they got a match coming up. So he's still building the match. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was Sue Williams who said, "Someone get Nemeth pregnant too." And that made me laugh. I laughed very hard when I saw that.
Wait, like, who got pregnant? Who are you talking about?
Oh God. I heard.
Don't do it.
Everybody knows we're not supposed to talk about it, but everybody knows.
Yeah, yeah.
The juice got loose, man. What else? What do I gotta say?
Oh yeah, brother.
Hey, headphones back on. You're not supposed to be listening to this.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. But yeah, God bless Steve. Tough dude. Got his bell rung. Hopefully he takes his time and comes back when he's completely ready, completely healthy, and all of that stuff. And he actually has good medical care because he's VA. So he didn't have to rely on TNA to take care of that stuff. He can just go to the VA and he'll be all right. So that's the good news. Yeah. That's the good news. Let's get to the wild story, JD.
What's the wild story?
So the former MLW champion, Mads Cruel Krueger. Yeah, Cruel is his name. He was at an independent show called Ruthless Pro Wrestling. I think it's a deathmatch show. And here is Lou Nixon has detailed to Cultaholics Tom Campbell the events that had led to the alleged stabbing of Cruel by a fan at Ruthless Pro Wrestling. So They had a show, and one of these fucking deathmatch fans decided to stab Cruel at some point during the show. I'm just gonna read this verbatim.
We'll get there. King, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, I'm gonna read this verbatim. Is King going off? Is he? Am I not being sanctimonious or self righteous enough?
No. He wanted to know why. He wanted if he missed the MLP TV show talk. So we'll get there.
No, not yet. Not yet. Yeah.
Let's see. Let's talk about this.
Man. Yeah. I'm gonna pull this up. So if you're watching on YouTube, I'm gonna read this verbatim so I don't fuck anything up. I want to get the story right. So audio, just listen to this. So at the start of the show, I was speaking to Cruel. Cruel told me that the guy went up to the merch stand, the guy that stabbed Cruel, at the start of the show, started asking Cruel how much all of his merchandise was, and then went, "I'm not effing paying that much," and then walked away. That's kind of a dick thing to say. The guy was front row during Cruel's entrance now, and he's like a big monster, and he walks around. The guy stepped out of the front row and stepped in front of Cruel. If you're not familiar with what Cruel is, he's a big bastard. He's about this. He actually looks, moves around, and like while he's wearing the mask, he looks exactly like Doc Gallows or Luke Gallows for sure.
It's like a modern day Lord Humongous gimmick, essentially.
Yeah, and he's got this really creepy mask on. So the guy scored up to him. Cruel obviously didn't break character and made him look silly. And then during the match, I think the guy got knocked out of his seat. The video you see happens after the show. Now, currently the guys went up to Cruel's merch table at the end of the show and squared up to him and started going, "Let's effing go, then let's effing go." And then tackled him. In the tackle, that's when he must have shanked him, because Cruel didn't realize he got stabbed until afterwards. Now, Cruel has come out on Twitter and said, "I'm fine." he's a tough old school guy, but it was after the main event, after the show. Cruel, Schlack, Lou Nixon were out there at their gimmick table selling merch, old school brothers, and this fan came up and just staring down Cruel. So Cruel stared right back at him, and next thing you know, the fan tackled Cruel through the table, and while he had him on the ground, stabbed him in the lower right quadrant of his abdomen. At that point, the boys saw he had a knife, so they just started lighting him up. So all the wrestlers came to Cruel's aid and just started throwing some of the worst, like, poorly thrown punches you've ever seen in your life, but they were hitting the guy for sure. They didn't want to take the chance of stabbing them too, so they pushed him towards the door. Somebody Spartan kicked him down the stairs. So, yeah, they just jumped this guy for stabbing Cruel. But Bill Watts would be happy. I would talk to those guys about working on their technique for throwing the punches. But that's a crazy story, dude.
Dude, this is the most old school wrestling thing. We keep talking about how wrestlers today aren't tough, and then a fan goes 1970s and stabs Cruel. And they beat the shit out of him.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Dude, Bill Watts is smiling in his grave, which is crazy. He's not even dead yet.
Yeah,
but like
yeah. Don't do Richard Lewis, man. That almost got us in trouble.
Oh shit, that's true. We did almost kill Richard Lewis.
And then he died a few weeks
later. Fuck, God damn it! I'm not gonna what's gonna kill him. Right, this is crazy. This is some right out of the 1970s. It's like you see this big, nasty looking heel, and someone goes, "I'm gonna stab that guy." Yeah. Like, it does make the whole merch table culture thing kind of scary. I mean, like, independent pro wrestling really relies on people interacting with the fan base, which is why we don't have a lot of like true heels today. But Cruel's one of those guys who's like a legit like heel in these days. He's just like an old school guy, like big, nasty, you know, dude in a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And he got stabbed in the abdomen. Like, that's how Brody died.
Yeah.
This is like, it's scary. I'm glad he's okay. I hope that guy gets put away and has to go through some like mandatory therapy, because very clearly he's disturbed. Like,
yeah.
Fucked up. Excuse me.
Yeah. Shit. No, that's a scary thing. And, you know, it's like you can't really ask for security at those places, because these are really kind of low rent type of, they're not spending a lot of money on these shows. You know what I mean? Like, they're not really going to have great security, great doctors, great EMTs. So that's the tough part about these small independent promotions.
So I saw this argument. This is going to kind of come back to where I was going to go originally. I didn't mean this, but I'm going to pull it in here. MJF was talking about how a lot of these indie wrestlers today kind of suck because they don't get in the car and go drive to work for a hot dog and a handshake. Mm. You know, and he has a point to that.
I agree with him. Yeah,
I do too. Like, there's not enough dedication, and there's not enough people willing to get better. And even, you know, TJ Wilson was talking about today how even WWE, these guys aren't getting enough reps to where, like, It's funny. Joe and Rich did the same thing we did. They were watching old Midnight Express shit, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about last week, and we were watching how just guys just aren't as good as they used to be. No. I know we talk about how much better wrestling is, how much more athletic it is, but like work is better back then. Like we watched the Midnight Express, the punches were better. It looked more fluid. Like wrestling was just better back in the day. And a big reason of that, and like you're talking about Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay, yeah, those guys are amazing. But like the average wrestler is so much levels below what they were 30, 40 years ago because they're not getting the reps in, right? Mm-hmm. That is our, I just saw this argument on Reddit actually, where this guy's like, he hated the argument that MJF said because it's exploitative to the workers. And they're like, mm-hmm. these people need to be paid what they deserve because also otherwise you're just justifying forcing people to be homeless to chase a dream. And I'm like, I get what you're saying, brother. Like I'm a hardcore leftist too. But yeah. When you choose a life in the arts, you have to understand that your work that doing work in an artistic field until you get a full-time contract is a hobby.
Yeah.
It's not a job. And I said, like, what you're saying makes sense in theory, but these independent shows cannot run like that. They will not exist. And if your idea is one, they shouldn't have them, then where do these people get better?
Exactly.
And you can sit there and say it's bullshit if you shouldn't be able to do this, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, to an extent, you got a point. But I mean, I know Jim Cornette likes to get his outlaw mud show, whatever. But I mean, if these things don't exist, how do people get better? How do people get work? How do people how do they learn to be pro wrestlers? Because we've seen for over a decade now, just putting people in a warehouse in Orlando, unless you're a woman, because it seems to work better for some reason with women than it does with men. Like occasionally you'll get Roman or Obafemi or something like that, that it works out really good for, but there's a whole lot of more failures than there are successes. Right. And the vast majority of talented professional wrestlers came up working for hot dogs and handshakes. That's just the reality of it. It's like, if you're going to be an actor, the vast majority of people don't start working on, you know, a Martin Scorsese film. You do like dinner theater, or you do some shitty independent films or student films where you're not getting paid anything. You know, the only way you get better at something in the arts is just to go do it over and over again until you get good. And it does suck. But like, and these are the backsides of it, is you could get some fucking lunatic who still thinks it's real, who tries to kill you. But I mean, like, how else are you going to get better?
Yeah. You know, it's the old, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard said that he was at his best when he was, you know, young in boxing and he was coming up, and that's when he was at like his peak. And he said, because it's hard to get out of bed when you're laying in satin sheets, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is, it's really tough to get out there and get, you know, get the road work when you're rich. And I get it. And I think the journey is a part of the story. The journey is part of how you get better. And like remembering the days when you were broke and you were, you know, starving and you're out there, like Steve Austin will tell you, is like, he was like living off of just like, you know, boiled potatoes and or raw potatoes and things like that. Like he couldn't afford, but it made him hungry and it made him great. And then by the time he got to where he was at, like he had, you know, arrived, you know, and he was an anomaly because it really took him 7 years. Like it only took him seven years. A lot of guys back then, it was taking 10 to 15 years before they actually were making it big. And it only took Steve Austin seven because he was just a unique generational talent.
You know? I hate the idea that Steve Austin wasn't good and nobody cared about him until he became Stone Cold. That's not true. No. Steve Austin literally was Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Rookie of the Year in 1990 because everybody went, oh my God, this man's amazing. From the moment he walked into a ring, it just took him time to become like an elite main event.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Like in 7 years, like think about 7 years. 7 years ago is when Dynamite started. Okay. Yeah, look at this. Dynamite starts in 2019. It's currently 2026. That is the same amount of time that Steve Austin first worked, who shows up at Chris Adams' school and has the match with Bret Hart. That's the same amount of time.
Yeah.
Fucking wild.
Yeah. And look at how much he improved between what, 1988, 1989, and 1996, Steve Austin versus a guy, it's just some of the guys that got plucked from the Indies, started working Dynamite and decided to quit working the Indies. And they've been on Dynamite for 7 years. Like, are they better than they were 7 years ago? A lot of them, no. Same with a lot of the people that were in NXT. Are they better now than they were 7 years ago? For the most part, they're not. And it's because they're not out there starving. They're not out there getting better. They're not hungry. They don't really want this life, right? Like, and we sound like a couple of old curmudgeons, you know, but like, I think when we're watching the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express, like, you know, Dennis Condrey at that point had been around for 10 years, but Bobby Eaton had only been around for a few years. And Rock and Roll Express hadn't been around for that long either. And they're elite performers because they had been working a couple hundred matches a year.
So Cyberry 99 says MJF had other things going for him besides that, so it's easier to say that. Like what? Like MJF wasn't getting movie roles and those kind of things until he was a professional wrestler. He lived with MJF is from a
from an affluent family.
I don't even know if he's there. I think he plays it up. I think he's from like an upper middle class family in Long Island. Like I think they play up them being the wealthy thing. I don't think he's actually wealthy. I think he's comfortable, but he himself drove around and did those things. Like MJF hustled his ass off. Like
he
wasn't getting those huge opportunities. He had one spot on the All Out card because he annoyed Cody Rhodes until he gave him a shot, and he was just in a battle royal and took advantage of those things. Like that dude, say what you want about MJF, that dude hustled his ass off and worked for every opportunity he got. Like that dude, talks the walk.
Yeah, he was on the indies driving around MVP just peppering him with questions. Like that story that he told was the true story for sure. So I get where some of the socialists would be like, no, you just have to have it all right away, the same as everybody else. That doesn't really work. Like you got to work your way up. Like if I retired in the Air Force as a master sergeant, had I come in getting paid as a master sergeant and stayed the same, I wouldn't have worked harder. What's the incentive? You have to start off low and then work your way up. Like that's how it fucking works.
I'm going to say this is too, is like incentive, but the reality is, and like I've worked as a video guy, like I did it all, like as far as like good jobs, shit jobs, up, down. And when I was giving out jobs, I would give a lot of internships to people. One, cause you didn't have huge budgets. Two, people like, I want to get paid. And I'm like, you ain't worth it.
Yeah.
You ain't. And I had to learn that too. Come out of college. I was the best person in my college. When it came, my reel was better than everybody else's. But when I grew up and had to get a real job, I was competing with editors that have been in the business for 30 years. People that work for Oprah. Like, you think, who are you going to hire? A guy who's got 30 years under his belt, or some snot-nosed kid from college who doesn't know what the fuck he's doing? Like, that's just the reality of work. And I think a lot of the, and I hate how we do sonic conversions, but like, in reality, like when you're young, you don't know what you're doing. The only way to get better is to do it and to take shit jobs and to earn your way and get better. The only way to get better is to do things. And I think that's a massive problem with the AEW rosters. A lot of those people haven't had the opportunity. No, haven't taken advantage of the opportunities
to get better.
Yeah. Chris Statlander went all over the place with MJF and worked those shitty shows.
Yeah.
She got better. Like, Bane was out in, like, she was signed. Like, remember there were rumors about her being signed to AEW for like 2 or 3 years. She was in Japan getting better.
Yep.
Like, this is what you have to do. And a lot of these kids from the Performance Center aren't that great because they don't have opportunities to get better. And here's one of our favorites.
Jay
has not improved in years. No, because she does not get out on those shows and get better. Like, she's very comfortable in her contract, and she's not, I don't think she's worth re-signing. She's got a great look to her, but there is no difference from her from 2020 pandemic era to right now. Look how much everybody else has come in and surpassed them. Like, the AEW women's division used to not be very good. Now it's pretty goddamn special.
Yeah. A ton of
talent there now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty loaded women's roster there. And if you're not out there paying your dues and getting better, you're not going to make it. Willow paid her dues and got better.
Dude, she was on every indie. She was on every freaking indie. Willow was everywhere. Brian Cage still works. Like, the man just got back, and you know for sure he's going to be in the car driving somewhere because the man loves to wrestle, and he's really good. He is. I know we're supposed to shit on Brian Cage. He's a good professional wrestler.
He is, but Don Callis's criticisms of him are fair.
Hilarious.
He does way too many moves, and he lets these little guys do all these big moves to him. It's like, brother, but he just really loves professional wrestling, and he's a super nice guy. Chad Schultz has a good shot right here. Bear Bronson, dude is everywhere. He got permission from TNA to go to Japan and do a tour there in Japan because he had never been there before. He's working every indie. He's got work every weekend, and he just went to Japan, and then he's coming back, and now he is going to be teaming with Brian Myers against the Hardy Boys at Rebellion. And he's probably going to win the tag titles because he's actually a good wrestler.
Dude, in Japan's the best place to go to. Like Dragon Gate, those shows all the time for Dragon Gate. New Japan, there's shows all the time. Big Japan, you go up there, there's tons. Kyoshu Pro, like there's tons of places to work in Japan that run house shows. The house show business is still alive and vital. Same in Mexico, there's tons of that stuff. In the U.S., they're kind of dying. And I understand from a business perspective, you not wanting them. But I mean, like, I think we need to go back and have these guys be legitimate independent contractors and the guys who are actually going to get out there and work. And that's what I like about AEW is a lot of those guys that want to work. Dude, MJF is going to wrestle Nemeth on an independent show. Is it a Creator Pro show? I forget.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, neither of those guys need the reps. They're just doing it because they love the business and they love to get back to the business.
It's good for pro wrestling.
Yeah.
It's good for the independents. And I like what AEW and not what WWE have done too, where they're trying to replicate the old NWA system where you have these like territories, right? Yeah. Where star performers are going to call them can move between them. So if you're in the AEW, you can do stuff in New Japan, you can do stuff in CMLL. And now you can go work up in Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling, Michael. There's a segue for you.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Maple Leaf Pro has landed a weekly series on TSN Network. If you're an American, which I hope that you are, God bless you, and you don't know anything about Canada, which you shouldn't, just kidding. TSN is basically ESPN in Canada. It is their biggest sports network. So it's like TSN's number one and Sportsnet is number two. So they got a big Canadian breakthrough announced this weekend, and Maple Leaf Pro will debut a new weekly show called MLP Mayhem on TSN starting in July 2026. It's going to air nationwide in Canada. It's the first traditional TV broadcast for MLP in Canada. TSN already carries AEW Dynamite, so this puts MLP alongside AEW. Scott DeMore goes on to say, from the very beginning, Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling's mission has been to showcase our outstanding Canadian wrestling talent by having them stand side by side with the very best in the world. In order to do that, we need a big platform for them to be seen. Tonight, we take a huge step into making that a reality. MLP Mayhem. So tapings are scheduled June 12th and 13th and August 7th and 8th at the Windsor, in Windsor at St. Clair College. This is a big deal, and I think it's really cool that they are, side by side on that network. Now, I don't know if it's going to be TSN proper or if it's because they have, kind of like what ESPN does here. They have, ESPN 1, 2, the Ocho, but then they also have ESPN Plus and ESPN Unlimited. So I don't know if it's going to be on the app or if it's going to be on the standard, but either way, this is a big deal for Maple Leaf Pro. This is awesome for them.
Yeah, like I said before, Tony's got his nice little territory now, right? Yeah. So, and then he's working with Scott DeMore, right? Scott DeMore is going to have Jimmy Jacobs writing the show, a Scott DeMore promotion written by Jimmy Jacobs. But I can tell you one person that's never going to watch a single episode.
Who else is Canadian? That girl with the tarot cards.
Oh, sweet Jesus. You're right. What's her name?
I can't remember. Taylor Wilde. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's funny.
That broke me. Absolutely broke me. That being said, I think this is really good for wrestling. I assume he's going to have the same, because TNA under DeMore is very different than TNA under Carlos Silva. I assume Scott's going to have, just based on what I'm seeing, is going to have very similar business mind to this and having a couple guys that there are theirs and there's going to be a lot of people traveling. And it's I'm very curious, Mike. Because wasn't Macklin supposed to work the Maple Leaf Pro show this weekend?
Yeah. Yep. So I was a little salty about this because they announced that Macklin was going to be there instead of the TNA tapings. And they announced it like 30 minutes to an hour before Macklin's about to go headline a world title match. So that match had gotten doomed before it ever been started. And of course he gets hurt. So, he was going to be there, but I think that TNA lets their, like Rich Swann was there. He wrestles for TNA. So Macklin was supposed to be there. They let their talent work that territory too. So
that's going to be interesting. I wonder if that will continue with now that they have TV, because with the TKO relationship with TNA, where does that, because now you're gonna, we all know it'll happen where Scott will say, like very similar, Rich Swann and Ricochet, there's an AEW talent and a TNA talent working in Maple Leaf Pro. Like the 80s guy in me is like, hell yeah, this is like it was back in the day in Toronto. You'd see this kind of stuff back in the day. I don't know where this lies.
Well, I think it's probably going to vary depending on the talent, because there's a lot of talent in TNA that are not on exclusive deals. And I think Rich Swann would be one of those talents. Now he's non-exclusive. Like they have him for a number of dates, but he can kind of work wherever he wants. And then there's other guys like, Nick Nemeth, who I think are on an exclusive deal and have to get like explicit written permission to go work at certain places. But he's a big enough starter where he can probably do whatever he wants. So
he can go, he can go work with for work create a pro against the AEW world champion.
That's no problem. Yeah.
Insanely fascinating to me.
Yeah.
We live in such a cool era of pro wrestling.
So the thing about it is that Carlos Silva, he's not a pro wrestling guy. And I think that's a good, thing. Cause he's not caught up in like the, you know, drama that's and the tropes and the bullshit that's gone on for 40 years. And Nick Nail is a big star to him. And so he's like, you want to go work MJF? That's fine. And then he's probably not even going to like MJF has to win. Obviously, like Tony's not going to let him lose. And I don't think Carlos cares. It's like, it's not on my TV. I don't care. So now would Tommy Dreamer step in and be like, hey boss, we got to rethink this strategy. I don't know. Like, I get the feeling that Tommy Dreamer doesn't care either. So, they're just letting it happen.
Nemeth's kind of bulletproof, right? He's got a ton of cred underneath him from his time in WWE. Like, he's got the flex. I mean, honestly, it's a no lose deal for anybody because I'm sure Nemeth doesn't really care. Like, no. He's going to do something kind of cool. I'm sure he was really looking forward to working with MJF because they're both good workers. Yeah. And I'm sure good workers like working with each other. And I'm sure that it's going to be a pretty good match. So, I'm of the mind that this is good for wrestling.
Yeah.
And it's kind of outside the WWE purview because they have gone above and beyond to not control TNA. Because I don't think, like I said before, I don't think TKO really cares.
No, I don't either. Nobody can name me a single instance where a TNA wrestler has been pulled from a show because of TKO. No one can name unless TKO was calling them up specifically to be on WWE and they like gave them the opportunity and they would go. But I mean, like no one, like TKO has not pulled rank on TNA for any stuff like that. Like their wrestlers wrestle AEW wrestlers all the time.
Didn't they clear? What about, no, they did do one. Leon Slater, didn't they call in Leon Slater instead or something?
So I think that was a legitimate visa issue because he wasn't the only one that had to happen to. Like Danny Luna was also not there, and the Canadian wrestlers weren't there. Yeah. So like Lance Storm couldn't make it. So they did pull him, but it could have been like a convenient thing. But they missed all their international talent. They didn't have him.
Well, to be fair, the visa situation is a little sketchy in the U.S. right now. Make of that what you will.
Yeah. So, I mean, but if they wanted a TNA talent on their show, they could have, but nobody's been pulled because of like an AEW wrestler on that show. Like Rich Swann just lost to Ricochet and it wasn't a big deal. And I know he's not exclusive, but if TNA really wanted him not to do that, I think they could have figured out a way to make that not happen.
By the way, I think it was last week you told me that Rich Swann's having a really good year and is really kind of on himself. I watched that match on Twitter. He looked great. I didn't even recognize Rich Swann at first. He's been awesome to watch him.
Yeah, he is a brother in scalp like me, and he decided to go ahead and come on home. He's taking it all the way off. He is.
I didn't recognize him.
Yeah, and he's gotten himself into really good shape. He's sober now. He's doing great. I follow him on Instagram. He's always uplifting, and he's having a really good year for TNA. Like in the ring, he's doing a great job. Him and AJ Francis had two really good matches.
Happy to hear that.
Yeah, they got really good chemistry. So he's doing good. But yeah, Maple Leaf Pro. You know, I think they could do big things there on TSN. They switched all their belts to Canadian wrestlers, so all their belts are all like held by their own homegrown stars. Like Stu Grayson is their world heavyweight champ. Stu Grayson's not a big star, right? He's probably not going to draw you a lot of money, but I think as long as AEW is subsidizing the TV show and they have the partnerships with New Japan, they had Kaito Kiyomiya was there, so they got help from Noah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and they got help from CMLL, like the CMLL talent were there, and they just announced that they're bringing in Mystico coming up. So I think they could be pretty successful. Now the problem is this TV show going to be good? Like,
and I don't think so at all. It's got Jimmy Jacobs and Scott D'Amore. I assume it's going to look like TNA circa 2021, 2022. So
that's kind of what it looks like whenever I've watched it. And they do have the good matches. They have some good matches for sure. Cause they're bringing in good talent. But you're also gonna have to deal with a lot of the hokey horseshit, which they're Scott D'Amore is kind of a WWE minded guy, you know, he likes that stuff. So is Jimmy Jacobs. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know that Jimmy Jacobs is writing the show. I know he was there. I know he was shooting an angle. So I don't know what's going on, but I just hope it's good. And I hope it works out.
Mike, any chance I have to take a shit on Jimmy Jacobs? I'm going to do it. Consistent. It's brace for impact days. I'm happy for him. In all honesty, I think it's good for wrestling. It's good for Canadian wrestling specifically.
Yeah.
I like that they have their own Canadian targeted promotion now. I think that's really cool. I think that I think because everybody likes Scott. Scott's got a really good reputation in wrestling. So I think a lot of people, because he's known for taking care of talent. So I think that a lot of people will come in and do stuff for him. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to make it kind of interesting, because I think it can have this, like, and I always do this, I'm going to do it again, I don't care. It's going to have a real Memphis-y vibe where people can kind of bounce in and bounce out, and just kind of, you'll have your locals that stick around, and then you'll have people that kind of travel. And I think that's great for professional. Like you said, they're bringing in Mystico, they're bringing in Kaito Kiyomiya, which shows they've got some Noah stuff going on. And it also means that it just shows me that these guys are legitimate freelancers. Yeah. I think that's good for wrestling. Like having these people be independent contractors that can pop in and pop out. Mystico has just proven time and again in multiple promotions now just how valuable he is this year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they're doing. I am going to check out the show occasionally. So quick notes.
How do we watch it? I don't have TSN. How are you going to watch it?
Illegal downloading.
Oh, never mind. I forgot who I was talking to for a second.
Yeah. Come on. Matey. I live close enough to Charleston where I can just be a full blown pirate now. So, all right, let's get to some more notes, and then I'm going to run down Sacrifice. JD, if you have to bounce, I know you got the kid there with you. You feel free to bounce while I'm doing Sacrifice.
He's got spring break this week, so he's fine.
Okay. Ricky Sosa officially signed with TNA, so it was announced during Sacrifice. Chris Bay actually came out to make the announcement, so that was cool. Introduced him to a crowd. They're making this a really big deal. I've never seen them do this for essentially kind of an unknown rookie, but he's a 21-year-old international rising star from Belgium. He debuted a couple weeks ago. I was there. It was electric. Signing happened. He had Tommy Dreamer, Carlos Silva, and Chris Bay. Ricky Sosa, he said, yo, he said, I'm so happy to be here. This is the moment I've been working for 5 years. So he started when he's like 16. He came out, thanked everybody. So this guy, JD, you need to watch the clip on Twitter. He comes out and he's towering over Carlos and Tommy and Chris Bay. He looks like a giant compared to them. He's like, 6'4", but he looks like a huge. He is a, what Jim Ross would call him, a blue chip athlete. Just a young, tall, like athletic, slender body, but muscular, and can do all the European wrestling moves. And he's got that big entrance. I think he's going to be something for these guys. He's got a lot behind him.
How long do you think they keep him?
Probably 2 to 3. I think that a young guy like that, you'd want to get 2 to 3, and then he'll probably outgrow the promotion at some point, I would think. He's not without flaws. He's
21.
Yeah, he's not without flaws. He's raw, I would say, and a bit green, and so he's got to work through some of that stuff. But like, TNA is a good place for you to do that. He'll be based out of the States now, and he's going to work all the indies. So.
Oh, that's even better. And then TNA, he'll be working with guys like Eddie Edwards, Macklin, and those dudes are all, they're pros. They're pros, yeah. Pros.
So. Yeah. Hey, next story is Kyle Fletcher injuring his foot. I gotta go take care of something.
Kyle Fletcher injured his foot, and Mike didn't prepare me for any of this. So let's go take care of something, Mike. Kyle Fletcher got hurt last night on Collision. I actually missed the show because I was at the Brewers game with my kid. I kind of want to go back to TNA signing Ricky Sosa. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to watch Sosa in the ring yet, but I do like that they find a kid who's, really, really young, 6'4", big body, like Mike said, because it just, for so long, independent wrestling has just kind of been dominated by, well, quite frankly, guys built, my size. I'm only 5'9". I'm a little heavier than probably a lot of them, but like, too often wrestling has been, independent wrestling specifically, has been dominated and dictated by the whims of kind of theater kids, right? We haven't had a nice influx of like a blue chip athletes, so to say, in pro wrestling, specifically indie pro wrestling, for a long time. It seems like anybody with some like really like high athletic pedigree has kind of found their way into the performance center. And most of them have kind of washed out. Again, on the female side, it's tend to work better than on the male side, like in NXT. Your Obafemis and stuff like that had worked out pretty good for it. But again, it's like the exception that kind of makes the rule. So it's really cool that TNA has found this Ricky Sosa. And I'm really interested to see kind of where it goes with him. I hope I hope that he can build into something before he gets too Americanized. Like, I know Mike said he's got that nice European style, and with, you know, that type of look and that type of body, I think that's super interesting. I think he can be somebody that TNA can really build around. I mean, Tony Khan kind of gets his hands on some of these, you know, young guys like your Nick Waynes and stuff like that, and has a tendency to not push them right away. Like, and not as bad as like Gato, where like you make them, you know, basically eat gruel and wear like, you know, black tights for 10 years before you debate even pushing them. So I kind of hope they can push him, but not like too hard right out of the gate. Right. Cause I think you got to let, like Mike said, if he's got some development, not issues, but he's got some development that needs to be done, it's probably gonna be better to kind of let him build a little bit, as opposed to just kind of putting the rocket strap right behind the kid and just kind of pushing him right away. Like, I know back in the day they would do that sometimes, and sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Tommy Rich famously won the NWA title at 24, right? But that was kind of the highlight of his career, was at 24. And then after that, he was kind of just, you know, he was just a mid-card, not job guy, but just like a mid-carder bounced around the territories for the rest of his career. So, you know, I don't know. I'm super interested to see kind of where it goes. We got some chat stuff I might as well pull up right now. Awesome one. Shrey says, can you blame them? Anyone that is like 6 feet plus with a gift and XX would rather play a sport like soccer, football, etc. Here's the thing though. Like, you got a point. Like, the odds on them, like, of course, if you're big and you have a Division I pedigree, you're going to go play college football, right? But then what? The vast majority of people playing college football don't even sniff an NFL roster, let alone a tryout. So you can tell me, you can say that, yeah, well, they'd rather play football. Okay, but for the vet, and again, I was a Division I athlete. I've seen this. I lived with guys that thought they had NFL pedigrees on them, and the vast majority of them don't even get an opportunity to even go to a training camp, let alone make a roster. So then what? Like, you've got this, like, and this is what, like, made pro wrestling work for decades, was we talk about Bill Watts all the time. Bill Watts are bringing guys like Dr. Death, right, who played football and wrestled at Oklahoma, and he was able to find a career in pro wrestling. Like, for a long time, Wahoo McDaniel, these dudes who were successful football players. Wahoo McDaniel's in the damn Hall of Fame. Yeah. And he was an AFL star, and he wrestled because they weren't making any money in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just the thing. That was, you can have all this, and it isn't until now. Like, only now can these, and I say now, within the last like year or two of these NIL deals, can athletes in college actually make real money. Like, you got college kids that are making a good living playing sports now. That is new. Like, and I don't know how long it's going to last, quite frankly. Like, but I mean, what now? What then? What are you going to do then? Because, like, we all know, if you give a 20-year-old kid $400,000, they're gonna put it back into the economy pretty damn quick.
Yeah.
So, like, what do they do? Like, professional wrestling gives people good athletes an opportunity to further their career. They just don't do it in wrestling. Like, and they should. And I think I was talking to you, Mike, when you're gone. I was talking about how it's cool that Ricky Sosa is this, you know, lean body athlete. Because for too long, I should say, independent wrestling has been dominated by theater kids.
Yeah.
And it's nice that we're getting an athlete back into it. So welcome back.
Yeah. Sorry, my kid was kind of like sleepwalking. So she was like, she came downstairs, she was like half asleep. So she needed dad, so I had to take her back upstairs. So all right. All right. So the other story was Kyle Fletcher hurt his foot. He's in a walking boot, might be fine. All right, let me get
Kyle Fletcher's tough as shit. He'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
Kyle Fletcher's another guy. Kyle Fletcher's a big guy. Fletcher's like, what? He's like 6'2". Like, yeah. And then he had a kind of a baby body for a long time. Then recently he's been lifting quite heavy.
Oh, yeah. He's on like good stuff. Okay. Let me get to this. Is the TNA Sacrifice review. I was able to finish it today. I was trying to finish. I started it Friday night, started at the end. And then I tried to start it from the beginning on Saturday. I got outvoted by the wife. We ended up watching Scrubs instead, but I finished it today. So I was able to carve out a couple of hours today to go ahead and get the show done. The pre-show, Mike doesn't watch pre-shows, guys. Sorry to tell you this, but BDE, or as BQ calls him, Big Dick Energy, versus Ryan Nemeth. And Ryan Nemeth got the victory there. And Tessa Blanchard defeated Jody Threat. There you go. That was in 6 minutes. Surprise, surprise, Jody and Tessa Blanchard are going to do another match at the tapings. And it's a street fight, because they have a mandatory that they have to have a street fight at every single event. So another street fight coming to TNA. They're very creative over there. All right. all right. So the show kicks off. The first match, JD, Leon Slater versus Eric Young. Eric Young's pushing 50, right? Challenging for the X Division title. And he's doing this whole like cleanse gimmick. He wears this mask and he takes the mask off and he's back to being crazy Eric Young, right?
Oh, okay.
This match is so fucking good. It's like you would think that Eric Young wouldn't be good anymore, but he's still like a really good wrestler. And I don't think he's ever gonna get the credit he deserves for just how good he is, because he just never made it at like that elite level, you know. Like he did his WWE time, and he just, by the time he got to the main roster, they just, you know, he just wasn't like their kind of guy. So he's been back to TNA, and he's just a damn good pro wrestler. And when you need someone to have a good pro wrestling match, you throw EY at them. And him and Leon Slater had a really, really good match.
I think it's a big problem that the best pro wrestlers in the world, too many of them are over 40.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that just goes back to what we talked about earlier about the lack of development in pro wrestling.
Yeah, for sure. So Eric Young has been doing this gimmick where he comes out first and he's been attacking people during their entrances. It's been kind of a subtle thing that he's been doing as part of this character that he's got going on. Leon Slater is hip to the game. So when Leon Slater comes out, he does his entrance. He's wearing a mask, right? Eric Young went and attacked Leon and pulled him down the ringside, ripped the mask off of him. Different guy, wrong guy. And then Leon Slater dove over the top ropes, did a big tope onto Eric Young. And that's how they started off the match. It was a hot start. But Leon Slater ended up getting the victory in about 15 minutes. There's only two matches from this event that I would recommend to the audience go check out. This is one of them, Eric Young versus Leon Slater. Leon Slater was announced right after this. He'll be defending his title at Rebellion against one Cedric the Alexander. So that should be a good match too. And they've had good matches before. So good stuff from Leon Slater and Eric Young. And then JD in the crowd, they cut to an audience member. It turns out it was the One Man Gang who was sitting on the side. Yeah, they were in New Orleans, and so they cut to One Man. Yeah, they cut to One Man Gang. He was there in his One Man Gang T-shirt, and he got his head tattooed, and he did the big that he always used to do back in Mid-South. So it was kind of cool to see him. He's had a rough go the last couple of years, but he was in good spirits for this. So
how did he look? Well. He's got to be. He was pretty young, actually. He was wrestling. Yeah. Probably his late 60s, I'm guessing.
He looks good. He looked, and like he took pictures with everybody after the show. He looks like he's good and healthy and doing well.
I like hearing that.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool. It was really cool to see him. I did not expect to see him. And the night before on Impact, they had Buff Bagwell. They brought him out, and he's got one leg. So naturally, Frankie came out and got heat on him. So that was and Buff declared that he will wrestle in TNA one day, but you know, I doubt that's going to happen. Unfortunately,
he'll probably get cleared before they clear Steph DeLander.
Yeah, that's probably.
I stole that joke from somebody I know.
Yeah, that was me. So backstage, Gia interviewed Mike Santana, and he said that the time has finally come for Steve Maclin. He said he either gets the job done or goes home a failure. So there you go. Next matchup was Elijah and Hometown Man versus Frankie Kazarian and AJ Francis. JD, Hometown Man. That's Cody Deaner. He lost the Loser Leaves Town match. He left, but he kept. They're doing the whole Stagger Lee gimmick.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So he puts the mask on, and he's Hometown Man.
You're in
the
light, man.
Andy's stealing the show in the background. Oh, yeah.
Could you just sit down?
What a heel back there.
I know, ADHD boy just bouncing off the walls.
Yeah. So he's doing the Stagger Lee gimmick. JD, I'm not kidding. This gimmick is super over.
It's always been over. The Stagger Lee gimmick always gets over. It's one of the oldest gimmicks. It got the dog over. It got Brian Pillman over. It got Hulk Hogan over in 2004. Yeah. It's a great gimmick. It always works. I like to see more of it.
Yeah. So the thing is that every time they announce him, everywhere he goes, it's his hometown. And so he's coming out in a local sports team jersey. And sometimes they even have the mascot. And these fucking kids and the kids and some young adults, but mostly children, go absolutely crazy for this guy. Cody Deaner's never been over in his life, but he's got something. It doesn't appeal to me. It's stupid, but it's working.
I bet this is Tommy. It's got Tommy Dreamer written all over it.
100%.
Because it's a Dusty gimmick, right? Yeah, Dusty, yeah. The Midnight Rider was Dusty's thing with it. And he did the yellow dog with both Brian Pillman and Barry Windham. They're both yellow dogs at various points. Like, it's just, and then the machines. The WWF did it in the 80s with the machines. So I mean,
With Andre the Giant and with the Masked Superstar Bill Eady. Yeah.
Well, everybody had Hulk Machine in certain towns. Yeah. You have Piper Machine. Like, that's the gimmick because everybody knows, but everybody's got to pretend not. It's honestly one of my favorite stupid pro wrestling gimmicks because it's the one time that everybody's kind of in on the joke. Yeah. So, cool.
Yeah. So we'll just get to the finish here. Hometown Man hit a top rope crossbody block on Francis. Elijah got a guitar, but Frankie stole it and smashed it at the ring steps. AJ hit a down payment chokeslam on a Hometown Man and then on the ring apron rolled him into the ring, and Frankie immediately hit the fade to black and a pin Hometown Man. And the recapper here says, meh, that would be my opinion too. But the crowd was into it. So it's like, you can't call it a bad match because like the crowd was going crazy the whole time. So
I've seen a lot of bad matches the crowd's been into. So
yeah, for sure. All right. And then this is the big scene where Tommy Dreamer and Carlos Silva, they bring out Chris Bay, who gets a huge pop. And then Chris Bay announces that they have signed Ricky Sosa. And then Ricky Sosa comes out, and this kid is over, and he's got this over ring entrance, the whole deal. It's a big, big deal. So I love that they're locking this guy into a contract. It's super cool. And TNAmerch.com has a million fucking Ricky Sosa shirts and jackets and hats and all that stuff. So they're really going to get behind this kid. So they're actually capitalizing on a star for once. So
I was saying when you were gone, I hope they don't do what Gato and Tony Khan kind of do when they get young guys and they kind of bury him a little bit.
Yeah.
But I hope they don't push him too much because he's pretty young. And like sometimes it's too much before they're ready. Like I like it, but I hope that they can find a balance, and that's tricky, you know.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so JD, Rosemary is doing this gimmick, right?
I'm out.
Where she's back in the, she had to go to the undead realm because she wants to bring Allie back from the dead. But right. In order to bring, hold on, JD. So hold on, she's trying to bring Allie back to the dead. So she goes to the undead realm. She meets up with Allie. Allie is still bleeding from the neck because she got her throat slit by Sue Young 7 years ago. So she's still bleeding, right? And she's got to go. So she summons Raven, who like is not dead, but in this story he's dead. So they summons Raven, and he's sitting on this throne, and Raven's giving them advice on how to get this deal done. And she's got to, you know, go through the seven deadly sins and make amends for them all. And then Allie will no longer be a ghost. She'll be back to life. And they get to Raven, and all he's doing is calling Tommy Dreamer fat the whole time.
Well, I like that.
Yeah, he's just like, he's saying a bunch of nonsense, and all of a sudden he goes, Tommy Dreamer looks like Lizzo had an affair with, what was the other guy's name? I can't remember the other guy's name. Oh, Abdullah the Butcher. And then he goes, here, if this will help you out. It's a vat of Tommy Dreamer's blood. It's filled with cholesterol. And so they're doing this whole thing. Last week they brought back Crazy Steve and they made amends to Crazy Steve. Yeah. And then this week, they're roping in Milo Moore, and Milo Moore peeled off and like a zombie followed a tall white rabbit. So the furry is back down some scary corridors. And then Jessica Havoc came up behind her and Milo screamed and then they faded to black. So there you go. So Jessica Havoc was back on this episode.
Wasn't the white rabbit PJ Black?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Fair. Back in the TNA on Pop days.
So this is fucking stupid. I'm out.
I thought you might. Ariana Grace was a stink.
I fucking love horror movies and I love horror books. It's what I write, but I just hate it in wrestling. It's so stupid. I do like Raven still, you know, feuding with Tommy Dreamer 30 years later. I expect that.
I was watching it. I was like, I don't think anybody's getting over. It's just Raven calling Tommy fat. And honestly, I like it.
Okay. I'm okay with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Ariana Grace, she's defending her title against Dani Luna, Laying Lee. Ariana has her fiance Stinks with her. And this match was okay. Dani Luna and Laying Lee are really good. But the problem is Ariana Grace got the victory. Stop me if you've heard this before. Laying Lee hit Dani Luna with her finish. Stacks interrupted the count and then pulled Layingly out, and then Ariana Grace stole the pin because she's the heel, and you got to steal the pin in a three-way. So that's what they did. So Ariana Grace is still the champion.
So pretty creative finish, man.
Yeah.
Pretty creative.
Yep. They're setting up for quite possibly the worst Knockouts World title match in history with Ariana Grace and Indy Hartwell coming up. I don't know when, maybe a rebellion, but that's what they're doing. Yeah. Woof. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty bad. Pretty bad.
Yep. Dude, she's worse than her dad.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is that I think that if her dad wasn't doing that gimmick, he would have been really good. Cause he's like, he actually is like a legit trained like wrestler.
I know all that. I don't think he's a very good professional wrestler though. Yeah. I think that's why they gave him the stupid
game. I guess, yeah, probably. Yeah. Okay. So here's the other match that I'm telling everybody is really good. And believe me when I tell you, this was so fucking good. And Mustafa Ali is one of the best in the goddamn world right now. This guy is tremendous. He's fantastic. He's in there with this kid, Jada Stone. She's a young girl. She's got to be maybe 22 years old. And he was in there like Shawn Michaels, but not like overdoing it like Shawn Michaels used to. He was selling so much for this lady. She did a Canadian Destroyer to his ass. She did a top rope Hurricane Rana to his ass. She did like a bunch of flying topes to a goddamn whatever. And this guy was bumping like crazy, made this kid look like $1 million. And then, of course, he murdered her in the end and pinned her in front of Trey Miguel while he was zip-tied to the ropes. But and then when Ali and Trey Miguel were in the ring together, they were fantastic, too, because they're really good. Tasha Steelz is good, too, but she's not as good as the other three. I thought they were all good, and everybody just went above and beyond to make a new wrestler in Jada Stone, who's like a super young knockout. So they did really good with that, and they're setting up for Trey Miguel versus Mustafa Ali at a Rebellion, so that should be fun. Good match.
I'm not a fan of the intergender stuff.
So they did it tastefully to where it wasn't like it was. She was getting just a bunch of babyface moves on Ali at different points in the match, and then at the end, Ali got, you know, he was being a jerk heel and got that. But yeah, I am with you. I'm not a fan of intergender match, but the way that they did it in the match kind of made sense in the mixed tag. So.
Good.
Yeah, I thought it was good. And then we go to the biggest disappointment, second biggest disappointment of the night. The match that I was almost looking forward to the most, Moose versus Eddie Edwards, just didn't happen, which, you know, had they known what was going to happen in the main event, they probably would have had them have a real match. But right as it's about to get started, Agent Zero, which is a big, thick bastard named Bill Collier from Canada, I think, big jacked up dude, attacks Moose before the bell, and then the system jumps Moose, and then that was it, basically. So like 30 seconds. So they didn't have the match. They're probably going to run it back with Eddie at some point, but I think they're going towards Moose and Agent Zero. So it sucked. The whole thing was stupid. All right. Mara Sade versus Elena Black, who is Cora Jade. They had a no DQ match because, again, they have to have a street fight in every episode. This match was not very good. I didn't really care for it. And, it was just them like hitting each other over the head with shit. And, they had gimmicks and they had thumbtacks and they had the bullshit, and, Mara Shade ended up getting the victory. So there you go. Jeff Hardy and Vincent versus the system, Cedric Alexander and Brian Myers had a decent little match, nothing too special. Matt Hardy was injured, and so Vincent was the replacement for the match. Go ahead.
Bill Collier was somebody.
He was in AEW for a little bit, but Bill Collier.
Just Bill Collier. He didn't go by something else. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And hold on, Chad says he's almost 50. That's true. Like and I think that's probably why AEW didn't really bring him in, because he was working a lot of the AEW dark tapings there for a while, and they just never brought him in, but he's really good. So TNA has given him a shot, even though he is a pretty old guy. But he's like shredded. He looks great. Okay. So Vincent was replacing Matt Hardy, and because Matt Hardy got mysteriously beaten backstage on the night before. And the big twist is that it was actually the Righteous who beat him up, which is what we all expected. They have a decent little match. Jeff Hardy hits the Swanton Bomb. And then as he's getting up, he's going to go for the pin. He looks over at Vincent, who's laughing his ass off. They go to the screen, and there's his brother bloodied backstage, covered in blood. And then a big Dutch is standing over him just laughing. And then that distracts Jeff, who then gets hit with a roster cut and gets hit with a lumbar check from Cedric Alexander, and they get the victory there. And then they leave Jeff lying. So we got the Righteous and the Hardy Boys are going to be wrestling coming up on Thursday with the big Collision versus TNA Impact going head to head. That is what they're going to go run opposition with, is the Righteous and the Hardy Boys. So there you go.
It's probably the best thing to have.
Smart. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Elegance Brand came out. Ash is still not there. She's taking time off for a mental health break because Mickie James called her a mark, and all the fans keep chanting mark at her. So she is taking mental health time.
That's kind of funny, actually. It's kind of a great gimmick. I like that.
It's a story. I don't really like that they're using slurs, though. Like, Dave told us that Mark is like the N word. And so here they are in TNA basically saying the M word. And I think I'm offended. So I think they should really clean that up. But, so they're doing their promo, bunch of horseshit. Anyway, they get interrupted by ODB. And then all of a sudden, she introduces New Orleans' own Taryn Terrell, who's back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
she's back.
I think she's back for this. They've been setting this up on Twitter for a while. She's been going back and forth with Ash by Elegance. And then Mickie James comes back. And so they're at the pay-per-view. They're going to do the Elegance Brand versus ODB, Taryn Terrell, and Mickie James.
How long has it been since Taryn Terrell's been in TNA?
Since 2016, I think. Maybe 2015. Because she was the leader of the Dollhouse. She was Dollhouse. And then she held the company up for money and they just let her walk. So, and she hasn't been back since. So yeah,
she held like Billy up for money. That's how long ago that was. Wow.
And then Billy brought her into NWA, and then I don't think she actually wrestled much there. So
I think she used to be married to Drew Galloway.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I think so.
You blew my mind with that. I had no idea. Yeah. Excuse me. I had no idea she had anything to do with wrestling anymore.
Taryn Terrell still. Anyway, let's get to the main event.
I was wondering, that was where I was really wondering.
Just still? Yeah. Wow. Lemon pound cake. Sorry. All right.
Thank you for introducing me to that, by the way, last week. I got so many more memes that I saw this week because of that. I appreciate you sharing that with me.
Yeah. I walk around saying lemon pound cake. And Mark's like, why are you saying that? I was like, I don't know, no reason. Don't go on the internet. Don't look it up.
Don't look.
Yeah. And then the main event was Mike Santana versus Steve Maclin, and we all kind of know what happened there. So for those of you that came here for a Mike glazing the sacrifice show, I can't do it. So they didn't give me the two match. The main event was not anybody's fault. That was a complete accident. So I'm not mad at them. So, but I can't recommend that you guys go watch the show. There was two good matches that I really liked, and it was Eric Young versus Leon Slater, and it was the mixed tag match with Mustafa Ali and Trey Miguel. Everything else, you don't really need to pay attention to or watch.
Dude, you get too much shit for glazing TNA. I mean, like, and I give you more shit than anybody about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you're pretty fair on them. When they have a shitty show, usually the first, which is why they hate you over there. Yeah. There's people that legitimately hate you in that locker room. It entertains me more than anything, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But like, you're usually pretty fair on them, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like those two matches. So if you're just a match person like those, if you just want to watch a couple good matches, those matches were pretty good. So go ahead and check them out. If you need 1,000 kickouts, like they may have done 6. So I'm sorry, but you're just like, if you want more kickouts, you know, Collision had those for you. And I'm sure there was a lot. So you could watch that instead. So, but it wasn't.
And that's why they think you're a TNA glazer.
Yeah.
Is when you do stuff like that.
Yeah.
For the record.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. And that's okay. I think I'm fair to everybody, and I'm like a dick to everybody. And as long as I'm equal. So I think that's good. All right, guys, that is going to do it for us this time on the Mike and JD show. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A main, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A main, no rain
from. Damn, we went long tonight.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.